Welcome to LOA Today. I'm Walt Thiessen here with Louis D'Souza and his daughter Isabel D'Souza. Today is Monday. It is October the 5th, 2020, and it is 4 p.m. New York time. But wherever you are in the world, thanks for joining us for another episode of LOA Today, your daily dose of happy. And Isabel, it's wonderful to have you visiting us there today. You look all comfortable in your pink top there. It looks really, really stylish. Even if Dad doesn't like the way that you have it backwards around, but that's okay. It looks good to me.
Oh, backwards.
You tell him. But anyway, welcome to Monday. I'm glad to be at Monday, and I'll tell you guys why. I have a little story to tell about how Louise's and my weekend went after the podcast on Friday, which was a wonderful podcast with Rita and with Linda. That day actually had been a little bit tough because our cat Joy, everybody at this point who knows the podcast knows about Joy. He's our outdoor cat. Hadn't been around for food lately, and so we were a little concerned about that. We had seen him that morning, but he just hadn't come by to get some food. And that's the last we saw of him until late yesterday afternoon. So he was gone for over 48 hours, and when he got back, he was injured, rather severely injured. He could barely move, but he had managed to drag himself home. And so we brought him inside and set him up in the in our bedroom and set him up to just rest, and he had a tough night, a really tough night. We took him to the vet this morning and found out that, I mean, yes, he did have apparent injuries, but we didn't realize what the extent of them were. Apparently, a predator got a hold of him and grabbed him by the neck and was trying to kill him. And Joy he has a very joyful name because he's a joyful cat, but if I were a predator, he would not be my first choice to go after. Let's just say that while I don't know exactly what happened, I'm willing to bet that predator has a very, very sore nose right now from cat scratches, because Joy did manage to get away. He was surviving some very cold nights. Temperatures Fahrenheit were in the upper 30s the last few nights, so he was in pain and enduring really cold temperatures, which was pretty concerning. But we took him to the vet today, and after some extensive checkups and about $1,000 worth of work, the vet reports that, first of all, the vet was concerned that he was showing signs of feline leukemia. He does not have that, so that's a good thing. Fortunately, he did have a fever, and that was because when you have injuries like he had, cats tend to develop abscesses, which are pockets of pus, basically, and that's a sign of an infection, and in a cat, that could be deadly. But they were able to go in surgically and clear all that up. And he's very anemic. That's why he's so lethargic right now. He can barely move around. But it looks like it's only anemia, and that's just going to be a question of time to heal that. So despite the fact that he went through a horrific event and we went through some pretty fearful times, it looks like he's going to come through okay. Now, I tell you this story in part because, well, it's what happens, and I tell stories about what goes on in my life here on the podcast, but also because I want to let everybody know that I had not forgotten all of the stuff we've talked about here on the program. I had been working, and let me tell you, you know what it's like, Louis, when you get into that really deep down, low vibration area, it can be hard to climb your way back up again. Mm-hmm. And I was having times where it was really tough. I actually, at one point, it was during a sort of a lull, so to speak. I pulled out a copy of my Money and the Law of Attraction book and just did some reading from that to kind of distract myself. And of course, the first thing that it said to me was, make sure that you don't try to climb it all at once. You climb it incrementally. So I said, oh yeah, right. So I started climbing incrementally. And actually, in the midst of it, while we were still not sure where he was, when he was out on about, and we didn't even know if he was alive or dead. I mean, we didn't know what had happened to him. But I was putting out there thoughts, you know, he's going to come back okay. He's going to be healthy. Even if a predator got to him, he was going to somehow survive it. And he did.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's been quite the experience to go through all of this. By the way, I can report that male stereotypes are disappearing in this family, because I was the one all in emotional state and Louise was the stoic one. So the roles got completely reversed.
You're coming in contact with your feminine side.
That's it. Yes, that's it. Exactly. It has been quite the role.
And Louise, her masculine side.
Yeah, yeah. Well, she was convinced he was going to be fine. I mean, even after... Now, she was the one who was concerned first. I was actually not as concerned early on. But she was convinced all the way along that he was going to come home. She wasn't sure how, but somehow he was going to come home. And, yeah, that intention slash confidence worked. So...
Yeah. Well, it seems to be a theme with the three of us on the call. Well, on the Monday show, like Amy's got a cat, and we've now got a cat that's arrived and lives during the day here and night sometimes, and goes home next door to get fed, and then comes back again. So we've got a cat, and you know, the kids are really starting to bond with the cat and mom.
I was quite surprised. Yeah. Mum responding with Sunny.
Mum really responding to Sunny big nice. Time. I was just thinking if a fox got hold or predator got hold of Sunny, we probably wouldn't be in such a good state either. Because we've already become quite fond of Sunny popping in now and again. Very regularly now. It's like almost lives here and eats there, you know.
Not a bad arrangement, as we talked about last
time. I love the arrangement.
Another example of attracting exactly what you want.
Exactly. Yeah. Combination in the house of different wants and manifesting out of that, which is brilliant.
Right.
You know.
You didn't want to pay for, like, if it got hurt or...
You know, we don't like the idea of looking after them, and we go on holiday. We used to go on holiday before COVID a significant amount of time, so we didn't really want to leave it in homes and all the rest of it. I've had a lot of experience with a lot of dogs, as you may have remembered. I've mentioned to you as a kid, and a lot of them dying of numerous different causes. So the idea of having a pet is not... It's not huge for me.
Yeah, when you've done it a few times, yeah.
A few hundred times and having them, a lot of them die on you, yeah, it's really tricky. So now we've got – the interesting thing is the nature of this cat as well, Walt. It's it just completely, totally, and absolutely and utterly fits into this house.
Really?
It is, you know, it doesn't tear anything up. It has good manners. It only poos outside, etc. It's, you know, it's a little bit playful, but not overly so. You know, it's just perfect. And
Daisy was telling me how he was really annoying to them. He threw up in their house.
Is it? He threw up in our house too. But that's
did
just
he?
Yeah, the fur he brought up. Fur, yeah.
He did it on Evie's bed, Daisy told me.
It can be, there's always challenges, but that's life. I mean, life happens.
And yeah, well.
It's something that we've talked about quite a bit, learning to find ways to appreciate that down cycle. I had lots of opportunity to practice, and I can't say I totally passed the test, but I did practice. I remembered. I was remembering our conversations here on the Monday show. And that was helping me to get through. Just remembering, you know, there's good stuff happening in here. If I can just find it, I just have to go find where it is.
And, you know, you could have had a dead cat, and now you've got one that is, you know, I don't know how well. Has the vet said it's going to be full recovery? Or?
Well, we don't know 100% for sure. It looks likely.
It looks likely.
Yeah. I mean, he's still.
I mean, that's just such fantastic news. I mean,
yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, the biggest thing, my biggest fear was fever and kidney shutdown and so forth, because then that's, you know, really, really bad. But apparently, for a cat, 106 Fahrenheit is about as high as you want to go, because at that point, that's where you start having organ failure. And he reached 103. And for a cat, 102 is normal. So it was not too bad of a fever, which was good.
Sorry, well, we lost the sound for a second there.
That's all right.
Oh, you didn't. I did. Okay.
I rambled on about unimportant stuff, so it's not a big deal.
Oh, okay, cool. When I looked at you, didn't go fed for you?
No.
The bottom line is
you looked at me. I saw on the camera, so I just looked back at you.
Okay. No worries. I was obviously not supposed to hear that part. Yeah. And you were.
It was medical information, and, you know, it wasn't the happiest vibe, but it works out. Yeah, That's the bottom line. So,
yeah,
he's got some healing time ahead of him. He's sleeping right now. He's probably going to be doing a lot of sleeping for the next couple of weeks. But yep, just got to get him eating more. And that's all.
There's something that I bumped into just before this call. It's is a people that have studied grounding yourself when you sleep. And they're saying it helps lower back pain, and it helps pain, and it helps inflammation and arthritis. And, it, you know, they go on and on about the numerous different things that it can help. So the earth is a negative, has a negative charge over it. So if you walk barefoot on the earth, you pick up those negative charge, and 60 miles out, you've got the positive charge on the ionosphere. And then you've got they were explaining that when it goes out to the ionosphere, it splits something, so then you get positive and negative. Mm-hmm. Positive gets shot back into the earth via lightning.
I have a feeling Sunny's in the house.
Ah, Sunny could be in the house. We could have a visit just now.
Okay.
You heard the cat flap. And it's an interesting thing as well about our house and Sunny is we have a cat flap. We have a cat flap.
The previous owner had a cat flap.
When we bought it. Yes, there's Sunny. Yes.
So it came with a cat flap to encourage the development of a cat.
Well, the interesting thing about all this is that we must have known about wanting this even before Isabel was born, because we bought the house before, quite a few years before she was born. So have all these parameters fit in that we can have a cat, next door looks after them, and you know, Isabel gets her feline friend to play with. The law of attraction has even got ideas of what you want way before
time.
It puts the different pieces of the puzzle together way back before. And you know, you just start looking at it in absolute amazement. Like, how did this work all that?
That's where you get the clear idea that there is no actual time. Time really is an illusion. And from the universe's point of view, it's like, okay, I'll plug this in over here. We're done. It's good.
you start getting a bit confused by the whole thing and how it works.
No kidding.
Is it under the sofa now? Okay. You're supposed to come on the show.
He'll be joining us very soon, and then we'll have an interview with a cat, except I've been doing enough interviews with cats. I'll let you interview the cat. But there was something else that happened. I'm curious to know what your take is on this. When we took him to the vet, now, of course, in the midst of all this, we have to do this under the auspices of COVID, right? So there's a whole COVID protocol. You don't even go inside the vet's office. You call in advance. You bring the cat in a carrier. You call when you get there. Everybody wears masks. They come out and they get the carrier, take them in. They treat them. They call you when they're done. You're sitting outside in your car and so forth. And after they took him inside, about at the point where I kind of thought that they'd be giving him fluids because he was definitely dehydrated, all of a sudden I'm sitting there and I was kind of wrung out from the whole process, but I just felt this huge surge of energy coming from the clinic. A very positive feeling, not a negative at all, just a very strong energy surge. And I associated it at the time with, well, maybe I'm somehow tapping into him getting fluids and now he's getting energized again. But then we got a phone call from the attending physician, and she had just been examining him. She hadn't actually treated him yet. So I'm not quite sure what that was. Now, we were invoking every cat we ever had in memory, like, please help our cat out, you know, send some energy to him. So I don't have a good way to explain what happened, but it was as if the universe gave me a lift when I most needed it. That's the way it felt, because I was at low vibration. This surge of energy comes along and it just raised me right up. And I'm thinking, wow, that was really cool. And it was, what was really interesting is that I almost overlooked it, you know, how things can happen and you just kind of dismiss it as, oh, well, you know, that's just whatever, like that was a coincidence or it didn't really happen or I imagined it. But I stuck with it long enough to realize I actually had experienced it. It really was there. But I have no explanation about what it is, what it was all about. So have you ever had anything like that happen?
Not precisely, no. So to me, it's extremely simple. You asked and you received, and you're a bit confused because it's not something you normally receive.
yeah, that's a good way to explain it. Sure.
it's really a no-brainer. The thing that you're getting from it is that, oh my gosh, this is possible. This is plausible. This is something that can happen. Really is out of the realm of norm. Once you start playing with the world that you're starting to get into now, you start realizing that there's a lot of things that a lot of people are not really going to get, understand, and I'm going to get them. I'm going to understand them. I'm going to roll with them. I'm going to have more of these, and that's all it's all about. That's all that it's about, really. So you really start living outside the accepted norm. And you start creating your own norm. And when you become comfortable with your own norm, you start having a lot more of those experiences, lot more. And then as you become more and more comfortable with even more exaggerated experiences, and then they often don't happen around people who can't perceive them. So they don't actually bump into you at that time, or they're not around, or those who are really in alignment with that kind of thing will be around, or when they're more open to that kind of thing, they'll be around you. So, or you just, in the beginning, you generally don't get many people around you at all, who have these kind of experiences. You just kind of like dealing with them on your own. And if you didn't have the internet and Louis and Linda and all the other people around you, you'd maybe think that, you were alone in the world, and a lot of people do. You know, they think they're the only ones who have the out-of-body experiences, the only ones who hear the inner sounds, the only ones who see the auras, a lot more people are doing that kind of stuff now, like a huge amount more. It's becoming a far more accepted and greater expression and experience for a lot of people.
Well, plus I was realizing that it's something that I think has happened to me in other occasions, or other stuff similar to that has happened, but I just dismissed it. And it makes me wonder, I'll bet you very often people have stuff happen that it doesn't fit the norm. It doesn't fit any of their known acceptable experiences. If they were to tell their friend about it, their friend would probably laugh at them and laugh in their face and all that kind of thing. And so, well, they're never going to bring it up. In fact, they'll not even acknowledge that it's there. And so it's not there. And I suspect that process happens a lot. I know that in this case, I came very close to dismissing it. I came very close to just putting it aside, like, oh, no, it didn't really happen. I had to consciously stop and say, wait a minute, yeah, that did happen. I actually did feel that. And I don't know what that thing was that I felt, but I felt it and I acknowledge it. And in that acknowledgement, then I started to finally get a sense of kind of like, feeling what the shape of the thing was, so to speak. Getting the depth of it and what the whole thing felt like. So just thought I'd bring it up. I've never heard about anything like that. I've never seen anything. I mean, Linda talks about sending energy all the time, and she talks about it as being palpable, and she has led us through exercises where we all can feel that it's palpable. But that's the first one that just kind of happened out in the field, so to speak.
I mean, all I would really say is I'd expect more as you become – because really the only thing that's stopping the most weird and wonderful things happening to anybody is their belief structure.
Yeah.
There's nothing else besides your idea that I can't fly like Superman, therefore tomorrow I will still walk around and have to drive a car, And the only thing that's stopping you is your belief. There's nothing else. And really you start getting what Abram says, you can be or do or have anything. And you start realizing how you can start on the step-by-step scale of bringing those kind of things into your life. When I started working with healing, with the Jinshin, and I had all these incredible experiences, I really, really thought I was cheating. There was a strong feeling in me that I was cheating because I can do so many things other people can't. And I was literally cheating. I was breaking or bending the laws of the universe. That's the kind of a feeling that you were getting. And then you start realizing, oh, well, I can do it every time, all the time. So I'm just going to continue this, and I don't care if I'm cheating because this works. I'll enjoy cheating. you start living in a different norm. That's all I can say is, and you just imagine, you know, if you believe any of the stories of Christ, having that level of focus of total belief and taking the water and turning it into wine, you know, and it's completely plausible when you understand the law of attraction and how it all works. But
honestly, just because it's plausible doesn't mean that it's easy for us to believe right off the bat. Take some time.
No, it's incredibly difficult. Otherwise, we'd be very rich selling wine that we got from the tap. <That's right. laughs> But literally, that's how easy it is to make money once you start getting it. You know, the idea is they say the gurus can just manifest blocks of gold next to them if they wanted. It just, money doesn't mean anything to them anymore. You know, they're really wanting to get to the core of life, the core of being, and all these extreme, the whole planet Earth has tripped out on money and finances. If you want to know if somebody's being really successful, they have to have a big car, big house, successful job, blah, 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 blah. Then we can believe it. Until that time, if you're poor and holy, you haven't quite got it.
Yeah, that theme has been carried out for quite some time. Yeah.
So, you know, you've got this whole planet absolutely focused on something that doesn't bring them much happiness. You know, you see all these big businessmen, they've all got their suits and ties and they stressing in their cars going to work. Yeah. And they come back and they're losing their hair and, you know, they're having to go to this practitioner and that practitioner to try to put them back together again. And, you know, so this whole fight for money doesn't necessarily bring you the harmony it can do, but that's when you're following your passion.
Yeah.
And you're absolutely following your passion, then you've got it. So,
well, that's true, and not just money. That's true with life in general. Following your passion is I've discovered just how critical that is. Because without it, it's not just that you don't get the things that you're hoping for in life. You don't get the life you're hoping for. You don't get the quality of life that you're looking for. And God, that quality of life, we often associate it. I mean, like you just described, we often associate quality of life with things, you know, how wealthy are you and what kind of house do you have and your job and so on and so forth. But that's not really what quality of life is. Quality of life is an internal experience. And it's just amazing how we made that mistransition, so to speak, or mistranslation of what quality really means. But now that I feel like I'm moving back in the other direction toward, okay, here's what quality of life really is. Talk about having an easy way to focus on stuff that we don't like and appreciate it. Because that when you are focused on quality of life as an internal thing, then it becomes easier to do things like experience having your cat disappear for 48 hours and find a way to believe that he's going to come back okay. And then he actually comes back okay. Mm-hmm. That process can't happen unless quality of life is good internally. If my quality of life was where it was 10 years ago, I probably don't have that same experience. Probably have a very different.
You wouldn't be able to tap into that level of power and alignment. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Isabel, what would you consider to be the ultimate thing that you can experience or do in life? It's a tough question, but what do you think is the,
well, maybe not a
very important
right now. What's the pinnacle of experiencing
for
life
me.
For you right now?
What would be the most satisfying thing for you to be, do, have?
It's a tough question to answer if we haven't given a lot of thought to it.
I would really like to work in an animal center.
Really?
And not do any surgery, but like look after them, feed them,
train them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There are people who do that. That is a calling. There are people who do it on a volunteer basis. There are people who do it for a living. Yeah.
Mm.
The question was, what would be the pinnacle? Why is that the pinnacle? Why does that resonate so deeply with you? Do you know?
Sometimes I just feel like it's not with all animals, but with some animals, like some animals, I just feel like I really connect sometimes. Like they just come up to me and some don't. So I guess they're just not under the same vibration.
I know that feeling very, very well. In fact, there's a kind of funny story associated with me and Louise meeting for the first time. Because after we met, the first time that I went to her apartment to visit her, she had just gotten a kitten whose name very appropriately was Rascal, because he really was one. But I have a lifelong affinity to animals, particularly to cats, to the point where I can be in a room full of people and the cat finds me. That's just the way it's always been. So literally, I ended up giving the cat more attention than I gave my date, Louise, which is not a good thing to do. And she was getting quite annoyed by it. But the cat kept abandoning her, coming over to me and playing with me and all this other stuff. It's like, what do you do?
You know, Walt, there could be something else there that I've discovered with the first time you meet the partner. And once, where I spent many years with this one individual, the way we met is I was doing a headstand.
Okay. That's different.
And there is this kind of theory that before you come into this life, you have an idea of who you might meet up with, and you kind of give each other signals of what to look out for.
Okay.
And, you know, the cat with you and your wife could have been one of those things. The headstand could have been one of them. And it started to jump out at me because I started to see patterns with different people. And there were kind of quite often animals involved or quite unusual circumstances that kind of leave an impression on their heart. I don't know how it kind of works, but it's kind of like, it's like a really a deep thing. It's not like a shallow thing. It's just an idea somebody can think about, and maybe they can pick up something and type chat or send a message about when they met, if there was anything that kind of stuck out. Because the more I look at it, the more I find that certain important individuals in my life, like my mentor, I was in a health food shop with a girl who was running the place at the time, and I really liked her, so I was hanging around the health food shop. And I was just saying to her, name was Quanta. I love the name.
Good name.
Quanta. I said to her, you know, I'd really like to learn reflexology. So the lady behind me just says, well, I'll teach you. I was like, what is that? Here's my name. Here's my number. When you're ready, give me a call. And that was so unusual. That was Jennifer.
Oh, didn't know that's how you met.
Yeah, so the story carries on when I wanted to go see her and only had a bicycle as transport at the time as a student. And when I made an appointment eventually, and there was many, many obstacles to making that one appointment, I couldn't do it. She couldn't do it. And we had to reschedule. And then eventually I got the appointment. I started cycling to her and I got a puncture halfway to her.
Oh, yes. I remember you told me that. Yes.
Instead of carrying the bike all the way to her and then carrying it all the way back because she stayed a long way from me, I just went back and canceled it. And then there was obstacle after obstacle after obstacle. And eventually I made an appointment. I left 2 hours ahead of time. I had an extra tire. I had my pump with me. I had a puncture kit. And I arrived 2 hours early and had to sit in the park. But I was determined to get there. So
that's funny.
You know, there's a lot of things that I've started to see in my life where that first meeting, there's something that kind of sticks out. Do you remember anything about when you met Nina? Because she's been quite.
Hmm.
You probably have to think about that.
Louise and I had an interesting first meeting. I mean, the story with the cat actually was about fourth or fifth time that we got together. So it was early in the relationship, but it wasn't the first meeting. But the meeting, we were actually introduced to each other through a mutual friend. So it was sort of a blind date. And we, at the time, we lived about 3 miles apart. It was funny. We both lived on hilltops. If we had looked outside of our windows, we could have seen each other across the hills. I mean, that's how straight vision it was. But we didn't know to look. But anyway, we got introduced by a mutual friend with somebody I knew in the swing dance community, somebody that she worked with. And we met at a restaurant. And the weirdest part about the meeting, well, there are two weird parts. First, Louise decided to show up in an old beat-up straw hat. Why she decided to do that, I'm not sure. She claims it's because she thought it was kind of cute and kind of, you know, quirky and so forth. I thought she just looked like a hick, but it was one of those things that didn't quite work the way she had intended. And then the other weird thing about the experience was she never looked at me, partly because of my height. I've told you, I'm very tall, 6'8" tall. And she's not anywhere near being an unusually tall woman. So it's definitely a mismatch from that perspective. And so we got a table together. We sat down for the entire time that we're talking and eating. She's looking down at the table. She didn't look at me once. And I came away from that saying, well, this isn't going to work. There is no way this is going to work at all.
And that was weird.
That was really weird. Yep.
Well, why did she do that?
I don't know, actually. I've asked her that. I've gotten kind of mixed answers on it. But I don't think she really had a clear idea. I think she was just kind of uncomfortable in her own skin that day for some reason. Mm. You know, just one of those things.
And that could have been the trigger. That could have been the one, that message that you had agreed upon. She was going to be shy and you were going to be...
If that's the case, then I think I need to work on my prearranged messages. Because
I know. But it's generally something quite quirky. I mean, if you've got a date and somebody's always looking down, that's really something to take note of, you know.
No kidding.
It's not something you would forget in a hurry.
Put it this way. I did not utter the stereotypical line at the end of the date, well, I'll give you a call. I didn't even say the words because I knew deep down I wasn't going to give her a call. Why bother to even say it? And I wasn't going to lie about it. I wasn't going to try it. I mean, it just had been a miserable date. The only reason I ended up getting in touch with her again was the person who hooked us up. Because as it turned out, that very same day, that friend was having a mutual birthday party. Her birthday, my birthday, and another person's birthday are all within like 3 or 4 days of each other. So we had like this group birthday party that I was invited to. And I went to the party. She said, well, how did it go? And I said, it was terrible. And I explained what had happened. And she said to me, well, you're going to give it the 3-date rule, right? And I said, what? What are you talking about?
Never heard about that.
I had never heard of the 3-date rule. She says, well, yeah, that's where you give it 3 dates before you decide, before you make a decision. And I said, oh, really? I was not enthusiastic about it. But she talked me into giving it another try at least. And I gave it a few days and I called again. And we kind of pieced it together. And within about a month, we were together. But it was on tenterhooks, as I say. It was very close to not working just because of that first date.
Dad, how tall are you?
How tall am I? I don't know, 183 or something.
So, yeah, in centimeters,
I how much taller would Walt be?
I'm about 206, I think, something like that.
Why do you want to bring this up?
No, I was just wondering how much taller than he was than you.
How much taller Walt is than I?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. How much are you in centimeters, you know?
203 or 206, something like that. Yeah, so about 20 centimeters taller.
Wow. Okay. Didn't realize you were that tall.
I can be pretty intimidating, not because I intend to, just because of how big I am.
Mm.
That was actually a problem for me early on. Because not just women, men, everybody. All I had to do was walk in the room and I'd intimidate people just because of my height. And that's not a very good way to start a conversation. You know, when people are shying and shrinking away, it's like, oh, geez. Add on the fact that I was fairly shy myself, and yeah, not a winning combination.
But. Yeah, some people thought I was shy, but I always knew I was never shy. I was just quiet. I'd rather listen than talk often. And you didn't know that about me. No, not anymore.
Sorted.
Now.
A different story.
Now I'm very much in the middle. I can talk and listen. I can perceive huge amounts of data and information without anybody saying anything. Then when I talk, I try to say something that is appropriate. Like, I'm so happy we're back at the sauna again.
You're just getting ready to do a regular podcast on the sauna. That's all that was.
Yeah, I mean, it was just so great to be back, and you know, with the Spa Spartans and us all chatting and having fun. And I bumped into this guy, and you know, I literally had he kept on telling me he has to come down to the gym. I said, no, you want to. He said, no, I have to. I said, no, you want to. And we were having this little ding dong. And eventually, once he understood what I was trying to get at, he said, okay, begrudgingly, you know, it's because I want to. He was like really getting it. And then we had this really good conversation, which probably lasted about 6-7 minutes. And, you know, he was saying goodbye to me and like I was a long lost friend. And when we bump into each other at the steam room or whatever, it was like greeting me all over again. It was like, and it's just so amazing how just short amounts of conversation that really hit home to somebody, kind of what they want, what they needed to know or hear at that time, can have an incredible effect on people. And, you know, I had lots of those before, but just because there's been this huge gap in those sauna, it was like, oh yeah, of course, I was doing that all the time before. But, you know, it would really brought to the fore how, you know, it doesn't matter where it is, often when I have conversations, or other people have conversations, you know, they don't kind of get that kind of reaction out of people, and, you know, who want to really be their friend and know them and all the rest of it. And the thing that I learned from my sales book, Walt, and you'll find this interesting, is an American sales book in the 50s or something, like really early on.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Way back there. And the guy says that the biggest thing in sales is passion.
Oh, yes.
He says you can talk the biggest load of rubbish, but if you're passionate about it, you're going to get somebody to listen and people are going to be interested. And, you know, I was really passionate in that sauna with the guy, really passionate. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's easy for me to be passionate about doing the thing that I absolutely love, is talking to people about life, the universe and everything.
Exactly.
So it's something that I've learned as well now that, you know, why I hated so many teachers at school was because they weren't passionate about their subject.
Yes.
Even if they were talking rubbish about their subject because they didn't know it well, but they talked about it with passion, I would have sat and listened to them in that class. But there were oftentimes, and I've brought up the story once about my history teacher. She was as boring as anything.
Mm.
Totally, totally boring. And then suddenly, for some reason or other, she vanished. I mean, all she did was say, open the book at this and this page, answer the questions there, read the chapter and answer the questions. And that was literally all she did every single day of every single lecture.
Wow. That's pretty boring.
And, you know, there's nothing more boring than that. You know,
loads of my teachers are like that.
I know.
They go through, make sure we understand it, and then they say, do 1 to 10, and then leaves us for the rest of the lesson.
Now, to me, that's not a teacher. That is somebody who's doing a job to get paid.
That's pretty much it. That's definitely not a passionate teacher.
You know, and I don't believe that you really learn from anybody unless they've got the passion. Unless they're selling something they believe in. You know,
which is odd because
the teacher's really good.
Yeah, you do get good teachers. You know, you do get them, but they're usually the rarity. You know, we should be paying the teachers more than anybody, any other profession on the planet.
A lot of people believe that. Yeah.
Of course, that doesn't always work as well. There's flaws in that philosophy, but you know, the kind of concept is that if you paid high dollar, they wouldn't leave the teaching profession and go into teaching big businesses or whatever so that they can make a hell of a lot more money and a better lifestyle, because, you know, school teachers really don't get paid a lot, and they're not respected. So but again, I think you'd be able to keep a lot of the good teachers at school where the kids are at the prime stage, where they're absolutely at that place where can absorb all that info so quickly. I mean, Eloise is still blowing me away. What was she saying just outside just now? She's saying, oh, we got to try, you know, when you've got A and B, she was talking about B. You know, when you've got your A plan and your B plan.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Basically, we were trying to get the cat down from the wall. So we were throwing a string over and it like went somewhere. So Eloise is like, plan A's gone. We need to get another one. And she ran.
And she says, yeah, we need to move into plan B.
Plan B.
And, you know, like, this is a brand new 5-year-old for a few days old.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, it's like a 4-year-old who's talking about translucent, and she knows exactly what it means, and she uses the appropriate time and place, and she's got all these highfalutin words that she's bandering around, and it's really like, wow.
I ran into an example of that today, actually, indirectly. After we'd gotten the cat home and we were kind of settling down and, you know, taking a deep breath and relaxing, Louise was watching some movie, the movie I'd never seen before. I'm not sure what the title was, but one of the characters in this movie was, let's see, how was that going? How'd it go? The character was, he was a character who was able to do things to help people feel better. I don't remember exactly how all that worked. And now I'm having trouble connecting it to what you just said. my brain's fried after this weekend. Tell me again, what was the story you were just telling me? Plan A and Plan B, and then you said something. What was it you said?
Isabel or me?
You, I believe.
I was talking about translucent and other highfalutin words that she was using.
Oh, right. Boy, well, whatever it was, it's gone. It'll come back if it needs to. That's strange.
It was so funny. Today I was walking her to school, and I was singing that song. And she said, what's the song? I said, the king is in his altogether, but altogether, but altogether as naked as the day that he was born. And she's like, why is the king naked? I said, well, these people were designing these clothes for the king. And they were conning him that this was going to be, you know, the most expensive and finest clothes in the world, and only clever people can see it, you know. And this little boy was blatantly clear and honest, and he saw that the king was naked, and he was singing the song. You know, look at the king, look at the king, the king, the king, the king. The king is in the altogether. So she was saying, oh, so the king was translucent.
Translucent.
And I was like, oh, my God.
A famous tale by Hans Christian Andersen. Yeah.
The Emperor's That's another song that she kept on saying, like something to do with crows or a bird.
Oh, yeah. It doesn't matter. I taught her 3 songs and she can sing all 3 of them. Brand new songs from my childhood, more kiddie songs. And she can regurgitate them when she comes home after school. You know, it's like, well, it's like, I have to be impressed, you know, from that aspect. But, you know, I've never been overly impressed with intellect.
Mm.
And I started to become clearer and clearer of why I was less impressed. And I've always been very unimpressed with a formal education and all the rest of it. And I've always thought of myself as more uneducated than educated. And I've been proud of that. And I've always wondered why. And it's starting to make more and more sense to me. Is because knowledge is only X amount. So your knowledge is about like this. How much you don't know is infinite.
Mm-hmm.
So being proud about this little bit is really ridiculous.
and you actually cued in my mind what it was that I'd forgotten before.
Oh, right.
Saying that. This movie that I was referring to ties into what you were talking about how your daughter Eloise is, you know, uttering this stuff at age 5 and so forth. In this movie, the movie took place, I'm going to say circa beginning of the 20th century, so 1900, 1910, 1920, somewhere around there. And the main character, the protagonist, is a graduate of Yale University, and his fields of study include a number of languages. I think it was German, French, Italian, and then algebra. He majored in algebra. And I thought about that, and I realized that was actually true. Back in the day, that was a college major. By the time I got to school, that was like seventh or eighth grade. Today, they're teaching it in elementary school. And my point is, it shows just how generationally the next generation that comes along picks stuff up faster and is able to do stuff that a few generations before took a college degree to do. And that's kind of what you were talking about with your daughter. Yeah. She's picking up stuff that, you know, 40, 50 years ago, you would have had to be
as Abraham, 25 years old. As Abraham talks about it, they're tapped in, tuned in, turned on with the culmination of everything that we've learned before, and they come in with it. So they're already wired to all this stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, we didn't have it. I mean, I think if you look at your and my life span and where we were when we were born versus where technologically the world has come we are now,
yes.
It's probably one of the biggest change periods on this planet ever.
Yes.
It's gargantuously huge.
It is.
You know?
Yeah.
It's difficult for Isabel probably to really grasp that I didn't have a TV when I was young, till about 16 years old. There was no TV in our house.
There was a cute reference to another show that Louise was watching. I picked these up, you know, in the background because I'm not watching any of them, but I hear, you know, the TV playing. And at one point, there is an interview with a gentleman in the UK who is in a town that used to be a major fishing town. And he is now a painter. He's in his declining years. He spends his time as a painter painting on the beach. And he remarked about how a child saw him painting with his little wooden paint kit and so forth and his wooden easel and so forth and said, "Mommy, look, he has an old fashioned laptop. It's made out of wood." I mean, the frame of reference is so different today from even 20 years ago, let alone 50 years ago. Just completely different.
Yeah, I don't know if Isabel will survive if we took her phone away from her. Yeah. Can you survive? No. That was... There's some honesty for you. Oh, dear. Well, Isabel has got school tomorrow, so she's going to love and leave us.
Oh, well, we've very much been glad to have you join us today. Thank you for spending some time, and I hope you have a great day at school tomorrow.
Hopefully I will. Thanks.
Thank you. Yeah, we loved having you here. And feel free to join us each time that your dad's doing a show.
Okay.
Okay.
Bye.
Goodbye. Good night. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. The things that kids are able to do today. I mean, I often wonder if they're being pushed a little bit too hard, but because I think that passion thing is really, really important. The fact that you talked about teachers being underpaid, I really think that a lot of that gets resolved when we place more emphasis on following your passion rather than following a paycheck. I think that actually is what drives the whole thing. And I think the same thing works with kids, with students, that when a kid or a student, often the same thing, is given the time and the opportunity to just try things out, play with things so that they can find passions for themselves. I think there's I've seen statistics to show it. There is a much greater likelihood that by the time that child leaves school and goes out into the world, first of all, they have a clear idea of what they want to do.
Yeah.
A major problem with kids coming out of school in the last 50 to 100 years, not knowing what they wanted to do. Half the kids who graduate from what here in the U.S. we'd call high school, they don't have any idea. They don't even know if they're going to college because their parents said go to college. They don't know what they want to major in. And if they aren't going to college, they don't know what they want to do for a living. They're going to work at the, you know, the local grocery store. They just have no idea because they haven't actually had the time to explore what their passions are. I think it's so
kind of, it kind of explains the saying we've got in our society that life begins at 40.
Yeah, yeah, it does.
It does, from many respects and many aspects. I think, you know, the boy in me only started turning into a man right about 40.
Mm-hmm. I'd say that's about...
And that's about exactly how it is. You know, it's not just something I made up my mind. But literally, I still felt like total kid and irresponsible and all the rest of it until I started hitting round about 40.
Mm-hmm. You know?
And it's quite a journey.
Not all that different for me, actually. And in fact, I felt very much out of place in my 30s for the most part, to be perfectly honest.
And my brother was doing a study, and he said that most men do their most significant things that people remember. Don't quite know how to put it, but mm-hmm. from the age of 50s. 50 to 60 or 50 to 70, which is like, wow, I mean, I hadn't really thought about that.
Well, it's encouraging for me because I started my podcast when I was 55, I think it was. So,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, the other thing is I'm often looking at the moment for... courses or people or some kind of training maybe that I can go on, but somebody who's passionate. The way I like Robert Kiyosaki talking about it is mm-hmm. he said him and his wife always upgrading their knowledge every year, but they never go to university or any other kind of institute like that. He says they're usually so far behind in his fields that he could probably teach them.
Yeah.
But he goes to people who have got a new method of buying and selling houses or something, and he goes and sits in their class, and they talk about the passion, and they've done it, they've got the T-shirt, and they're explaining it. And he says, those are the kind of courses I really, really enjoy going on. So
I'm with him. I agree.
And I really love that because at the moment I'm listening to another individual on YouTube, et cetera, and podcasts, who is really exciting me and it's really giving me a lot of new information and direction. And I'm always looking to upgrade myself and to fill that gap. You know, I might know this much, but there's just so much more on so many different levels that I don't know. And, you know, really looking to understand the whole compassion of the universe and helping others and all the rest of it in relation to LOA and all the rest of it. I'm really trying to get the feel of how that's all integrates and all the rest of it, because a lot of people can, as I've mentioned on a few occasions, that people can perceive that LOA is quite a dry and dispassionate and not caring form of philosophy. So, you know, I'm really trying to understand how it all integrates and how to put it across better, because I feel I've got it quite well integrated in my life, but not quite sure fully at the moment how to present that and portray that to others and all the rest of it. So it's something I'm working at from so many different angles at the moment, because it is what people consider to be the core of man's humanity.
Mm-hmm.
is caring about the whole. But you start realizing that we are all each other. We're all part of a whole. So if you don't care about your arm or your leg or your left ear or your right ear, then you're not caring about yourself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you kind of start getting the impression of really how my understanding of law of attraction comes across with and to other people. And
well, I think the thing that has made the biggest difference for me with that question is, first of all, passion, which we were just talking about. That passion really is important. And I think the passion is best exemplified by the people who, the interesting people are the ones who can tell a good story.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing about a passionate teacher. Passionate teachers are able to explain things through story and to pass along factual information through story. And that's what makes it interesting, because we love stories. Stories are...
We do.
Are,
we totally align with them.
Yeah. So,
and the nice thing about a story is that different people can take different things from it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. So really the key, I think, to learning how to convey all this, and it's one of the reasons I do the podcast, is learning how to tell a better story. The more that I learn to tell a better story, the better I'm able to explain to somebody what this whole thing is all about. And the cool part is with stories, you don't have to have a full explanation for everything in order for the story to work. That's what I love about stories. Stories actually tell only little bits and pieces. That when you really look at it, they just tell a little. I mean, what's the original Aesop fables? They told one little piece. Here's our one moral that we're going to tell you from the story, right? That's all the story was for. But it works because it really does. Just implants itself in your subconscious mind or in your conscious mind or however you want to look at it.
I think that's why Christianity did so well, is because Christ told some incredibly good stories.
Absolutely.
That really got my imagination, and I'm still remembering most of the ones that I was told about, that he told along the way. And the other thing is, remember, I've talked quite a bit about Ram Dass, so I bought an audio on Amazon Audio.
Oh, did you?
On Ram Dass. It's a collection of his old things before he had the stroke. Right. And one of them was the one that I remembered from when I was about 21, and my mentor gave me this old cassette tape, which I listened to about Ram Dass. And that story is on there. And I was like, my gosh, this guy is an awesome orator.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he told that story so well. You know, this guy who'd been training in martial arts for so many years, he was at the peak of his fitness and training and his martial art career, and he was on this train and it was crowded, and this drunk guy got on and he just pushed everybody out the way and he was hitting people and all the rest of it. And he was looking at this guy and just about to take him on, because it's like, you know, I've been trained all my life just to be here, just to do this right now. And he was getting himself all worked up to go sort this guy out and take him out instantly. And as he was just about starting to walk forward to go to the guy, he hears this ear splitting, "Hey!" from the corner. And this was all happened in Japan. And everybody in the whole train turned around and looked, and there was this little old man sitting in the corner there with a couple of groceries and things like that. And he was shouting at the guy. He says, "Hey, come over here. I want to talk to you," to this drunk guy. and this guy looks up and he says, "Oh." And he goes over there and he says to him, "Oh, have you had a bad day?" And he says, "Yeah, I've had a terrible day." He says, "You know what I do when I have a bad day? I go home and I sit down and I have some sake. Actually, I have some sake here. Would you like some?" And they sit down, and this guy's sitting there he's standing there, just about to sort this whole guy out and take him out and knock him flat on the ground. And he's looking at this conversation and he's watching it with total fascination. And he's like, The old man says to him, I understand your problems. Yeah, I've also lost a wife, and I had this and that and all the rest of it." And he's creating this whole bond and all the rest of it. And eventually the guy starts crying, and eventually he's got his head on this guy's lap, and he's like stroking the guy's hair.
Wow.
And he was thinking, "Oh my God, have I got something to learn from this?"
Yeah, right.
All this year of martial arts, and I haven't learned the core of what martial arts teaches.
Yeah.
And martial arts core teaching is you get taught to fight so you never get in a fight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's very good. That's a good story, by the way. I mean, we were just talking about the importance of stories, and you just found a way to end the podcast on a brilliant story. So thank you for that.
Do love Ram Dass.
So, okay. Well, then we'll look forward to the next time Isabel joins us. So thank you, daughter, once again, for joining us on the program.
Will do.
Wonderful. And thank you very much for all of your stories too. Apologies to the live streamers. YouTube was not cooperating today, but we are going to post this so you'll be able to listen to the recording. Thank you especially to our podcast listeners as well, and we will see you all next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.
Carpe diem, everyone.